Good evening, everyone. I want to greet each one of you in Christ's name this evening. I'm enjoying my time here so far. I thank you young folks for allowing me, this old man, to play volleyball with you today. That was very kind of you. As we all face things, different times of our life, my ankle kept telling me, hey, you need to get off your feet for a little bit. So, yeah, but I do appreciate that time very much. There are places where men my age aren't necessarily welcome on the volleyball court. And as bad as they like to be, they don't want to offend anybody, so they don't play much. But anyhow, appreciate that. God bless you as you relate to each other, as you relate to the church here, and as you seek God in your life, in your homes. You are an integral part of the subject that I would like to share with you tonight. Our home as a haven for the family. I want to just comment a little bit on the song we sang. Let us follow his banner, the cross daily bear. Let us yield, wholly yield to the Spirit's power and faithfully serve him in life's brightest hour. And then it talks about how we're making offerings, the third verse. For Christ and the church, willing offerings make. You being here tonight is a willing offering that I believe God recognizes. You singing these songs and making these promises and encouraging each other in this is a willing offering before God. Time, talents, and gold for the dear master's sake. And then you said, we will render the best we can bring to him. And that's the heart's wealth of love that will never grow dim. And it's because of Jesus Christ in our hearts that helps us to maintain that heart's wealth of love. There's a verse in Genesis 49:13. If you'd like to, you can turn to that. Genesis 49:13 might give you a little bit of a backdrop of I was looking on where what does the Bible say about a haven? What do I think of when I think about a haven? Well, Genesis 49:13. Now here he's talking about Judah. And Judah this and Judah that. He's talking about the different ones of Jacob's sons. And it's when he was calling his sons together. Verse 1 says, Genesis 49:1, and Jacob called unto his sons and said, gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. Wow, do we as parents do that to our children today? It's kind of a new thought, isn't it? This is what you're going to be. I mean, you, Henry, are going to be so-and-so, and this is what your life is going to be like, and Susanna, you're going to be doing this and this. Not normally. We try to teach them and train them and prepare them for what their life will be like, but we try to bring them to Christ. But this is what Jacob was doing. And if you will, go down to verse 13. Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be a haven of ships, and his border shall be unto Zion. Now, that was one example of a haven. If you will, turn with me to Acts 27, verse 12. We're going to be talking just a little bit about ships or boats or havens tonight. And I'd like to make some applications to our home. I enjoy being on the water for the most part. But I have been out there already when I was really glad to see a haven. Acts 27, verse 12. Now, Paul knew what it was like to be on the water as well. Acts 27, verse 12. And we're not going to read the whole account here, but Paul knew what it was like to experience a storm at sea. And this is what he says about his story here. Verse 12. We'll start reading verse 11 here, or 10. And said unto them, Sirs, this is Paul speaking, Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading of the ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenix, and there to winter, which is a haven of Crete, and lieth toward the southwest and northwest. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence they sailed close by Crete. And if you want an interesting story, another time maybe, you can just keep on reading. And you'll find out that they really, really, really would have liked to see haven a little quicker than they did. And that I believe that was when it was talking about the shipwreck. If you read the last verse of that chapter, it talks about them being saved, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they all escaped, all safe to land, which was somewhat of a miracle, I would say. So, yes, a haven at sea is a wonderful place to be. Now, if you will, turn with me to Psalm 107. They would have been better off if they would have stayed, followed Paul's advice, because I believe Paul had a vision or understood that there was going to be trouble. If they would have followed Paul's advice and stayed there, they wouldn't have lost the ship. But God can keep his people wherever they are. And they all were saved then. Psalms 107, 23. They that go down to the sea in ships that do business in great waters, these see the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep. For he commandeth and raises the stormy wind, which lifteth up the waves thereof. They mount up to the heaven, they go down again to the depths. Their soul is melted because of trouble. They reel to and fro and stagger like a drunken man and are at their wit's end. Have you ever experienced that? Were you ever on a boat where you couldn't hardly stand upright without hanging on to the rail? It says, I thought this interesting because their soul is melted because of trouble. Now, let's think a little bit about what Jonah endured. And those men were at their wit's end. They didn't know what else to do. And they cast lots on who's the problem person here that we're getting this awful storm. And the lot landed on Jonah. And they said, what are you doing? What's happening? Why are, you know, and Jonah said, yep. Yeah. It's because of me. It's my fault. I'm running from God, or whatever he said there. So he said, and they tried to save that boat. They didn't want to cast Jonah in the sea. But Jonah said, yeah, you're going to have to. So they cast him over, and guess what? The ship was saved. Mariners understand the fury of wind and wave, and the effects that it can have on a boat. Do you as a parent, do you as a father, as a mother, understand what the fury of the waves and winds and storm in your life can do to your family? Do we understand that? I think most of us would. I think we do. But as we touch on these things, there are issues in our lives sometimes that we don't know the answer. A little bit like I said last night, sometimes, you know, we ask God for wisdom. We make decisions. Sometimes we mess up and we make wrong decisions. What happens to our family life when we do that? And what do we do about it? Verse 28 says, then they cry unto the Lord in their trouble, and he bringeth them out of their distresses. He maketh the storm a calm, so that the waves thereof are still. Then are they glad because they be quiet. So he bringeth them onto their desired haven. Oh, that men would praise the Lord for his goodness and for his wonderful works to the children of men. As far as I will read. God is in control. God can control the weather. He can control the storm at sea. And surely, he can control the storms in your life and mine. He is all powerful. He knows where you are. He knows who you are. There's a, we do some fishing now and then. We go down to a place called Roaring Point, Maryland. And you might say, what a name for a harbor. Roaring Point, Maryland. That part of the Nanticoke River is aptly named. Because if you go down there and you put your boat out there and it's a little bit, you might think it might be a little choppy. You go out there and you have an outgoing tide and you have a south wind. You're gonna feel some chop, and it might be a little more than chop. The Nanticoke River and the bay in our area, in some of those places, gets pretty wild sometimes. But this Roaring Point, Maryland, if you're out there and it gets a little windy and you say, well, I think I should probably go home, and you have that to cross yet. You cross over that point, that Roaring Point there, and you finally make your way close to where the harbor is there. You're very thankful for that part of that haven there, that little place where you docked your boat, where you're getting ready to dock your boat. It looks pretty good. Because once you cross the edge of that rock pile, they have a big pier that's put out there. Lots and lots of huge rocks. Those rocks are put there for a purpose, and it's not just for anyhow. Those rocks do an amazing job of calming the storms, calming the waves, calming the water that is rushing into the sides of them and just ending up in spray. And once you get past that rock, the end of that pier, and you kind of glide into the harbor, it's a nice place to be. You're just thankful. Thank God we made it back safe. There are some elements of any vessel that must be considered before it's safe for sailing. And bear with me a little bit. I like boats and I like the water. But I hope you can follow me here as we're talking about some of these things, because I'd like to make an application to our lives. Sometimes we don't quite understand what we need to be or do, or we get it wrong, and we think we're ready for marriage, maybe. We think we're ready for that. We're ready for that trip. But are we really? Every vessel that sets sail or goes out there to do a mission, there are certain things that need to be done. It has to be able to float. You can't have it full of holes and expect to get out beyond the harbor. That's not the kind of vessel you want to be in if you have a mission to be in, or if you're going to go fishing. You don't want to fish with your knees in water. You won't get very far. The vessels are designed for sailing, not to stay in the harbor. So it does you no good to take your boat there if you just leave your boat, you unload it from your trailer, and you leave it there. It's made for sailing. It's made for floating. So you get on with your mission. You put your boat in, and you go out. There's several things that need to happen here. It needs to be able to support passengers. It needs to be able to support whatever cargo that you put in there. It needs a source of energy. When you put out on that in that harbor, when you go out at the end of that and there's a little breeze blowing, you're going to start going the way the breeze is blowing, or according to how the tide is flowing. The tide gets pretty strong there at Roaring Point. And if you lost your motor and you lost power, you either better put your anchor down or start paddling. And it's a little difficult to paddle a 21-foot craft. with one paddle. Doesn't work real good. Well, there's several things that need to happen to give you power. There's different kinds of boats. You have fiberglass boats, you have V-bottoms, you have flat bottoms, you have John boats, you have canoes. There's all kinds of floating craft out there. And everything is, I mean, you can put it in the water, but you have to have a way to power that. You have to be able to, if you're in a canoe, you have to have the power to bring yourself back in or call somebody and have yourself towed in. So it'd be foolish to go out there and think that, well, I'm going to go on the other side of this river here. But I know that I'm strong enough to get over there, but if you're not strong enough to come back across the tide, you're going to have a way of coming. So don't go across if you don't think you can come back. Well, might be good to have good friends now and then. If your battery's down, and you know you only have, maybe you only have about 2 gallons of fuel, your engine, if you get out a couple miles, your engine conks out, you have no power. You're at the mercy of the water. So, you know, you have to go prepared. You have to take some of these things in consideration before you go. And one of the first things you need to do is put the plug in. Boats have plugs to let water out, but if you don't put the plug in, they let water in. And that's not a good feeling when you're going down the road and your back end starts hanging in the water. Not a good feeling. So you have to kind of plan, make plans on what you're going to do if you're going to float a vessel. There's navigational aids, and this is very important to me. I don't know the bay like some men that have grown up there do. I don't know. So I have a son that's pretty good on these navigational aids, and I'll say, Freddie, where are we at now? Where are we going? And he'll look at that GPS, and he'll say, okay, well, let's go this way. So I kind of depend on him to let me know. I should learn it a little better, but you know how we are. If you don't have a chart plotter or a GPS to guide you, you can easily get lost out there. There's a lot of rivers, inlets. The Tangier Sound is full of all kinds of crooks and crannies where you can go, and it looks a whole lot different once you're out there than it does from land. So if you forget where you're going and you're having so much fun catching fish and you're drifting here and there, you might all of a sudden be done fishing and not know which way did I come from and end up on the western shore, maybe. I hope not. But, you know, it can happen. So a good navigational aid, and let me just say this, the navigational aids in our life is right here, and everybody can understand it. And believe me, if you don't understand it, read the manual or go to somebody that knows. And so can I direct you to Christ? Christ knows this manual inside out, and he's the author. So he knows. When you get to questioning your direction, go to the manual. If you know nothing about the trip that you're about to embark on, it's good to do a little research. Maybe you don't know anything about sailing or running a boat or the rules of operating a vessel. If you know nothing about the vessel that you're entrusting your life and maybe the life of your children to, are you ready to sail? Are you ready to take this boat out? Maybe you haven't tried it. You've never run that motor before you put it in the channel. And you hope it runs. And you didn't check it since about 2 years ago, but you're just hoping it works. I'm sorry, but I'm afraid some people go into marriage about that naive about what they're getting into. And that's sad. I say that's sad because, you know, the Holy Spirit can work in these people's lives and correct them. But I think it's good to do a little research before you get to that point. Boys, you're the navigator. Girls, you are too. But in a situation where you're thinking of a life companion, you're thinking about a home, starting a home, and, you know, those things are wonderful. They work great. But it's good to do a little research before you set out on that trip. What makes a home a safe harbor or a haven. If you will, turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 6. I think the Old Testament has some really good advice for us sometimes. But of course, I like New Testament as well, but I think we can learn a lot from what we have in the Old Testament. David, Moses, some of these prophets, writers, there's a lot for us to learn. Deuteronomy 6, verse 6 and 7. I'm going to read verse 4. I'm going to start with verse 4. Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. Who else taught that? Christ. In the New Testament, he told his disciples, he said, this is the law and the prophets. In verse 6, and these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. And thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest down in thy house. And when thou walkest by the way. And when thou liest down. And when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand. And they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates. That's pretty serious, isn't it? It's a pretty serious command that he gave the children of Israel there. When can we not be teaching our children about these laws? And I'm going to say it's not just these laws. And there again, we have wonderful things in the New Testament that God has given us for us to learn. So it's a continuing process. When you lay down, when you wake up, when you're walking, when you're sitting down. It's a full-time job, brothers. When do we have time to slack? Well, I don't read much slacking in here. You know, maybe the time comes when you don't have any more children at home. And they have made their decisions, many decisions in life, and they're doing other things. And they're no longer sleeping in your house. I don't think we can even slack then. We pray. We use our time like Job did. Job rose up in the morning, it says, and he prayed for his children, lest that something may have happened in their relationship with God and that they have turned their backs on God. That's a wonderful picture of a praying father to me. And Job, you know, Job was in the Old Testament. He was before the teachings of Christ. But yet he believed. And I feel that, because of some of the things that he endured there, God knew where Job was. It was to the point where Satan told God, he said, when God said, have you considered my servant Job? Job said, and Satan said, I can't even get close to him because you've put such a hedge around him, I can't touch him. What a wonderful testimony, brothers and sisters. That's what we're striving for, isn't it? That's what we're looking for. God is that for us when we allow him to be. But he also has some things that he asks for us, that he wants us to do. He wants a relationship with us. He wants us to know him. But I believe when I think about that and what Job was doing for his family there, what a challenge. What a challenge. Proverbs 10. I'm going to turn to that. Proverbs 10. Solomon was a wise man. Solomon didn't always make the right decisions. But I believe Solomon has a lot of good advice for us and also a lot of insights into life that you and I can listen to. Proverbs 10, 1 to 5. You know, young men, boys, this is a challenge for you. This is pretty direct, isn't it? Proverbs 10, verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is the son that causeth shame. Young men, boys, that is a challenge for you. Don't ever forget those words. And I know there's parents that grieve because their sons don't pay attention to these words, or it doesn't mean anything to them. And I feel for parents that experience that. We need to pray for them and encourage them. And there are maybe parents that take all the blame on themselves. I don't necessarily feel that that's right. But a young man, when he comes to the age where he makes his own decisions, must reckon with the accounting that he will face before God. And there comes a time when, you know, when they're children, you can teach them, and they will almost believe anything. But as they come to a point when young men and young women make decisions based on their knowledge of things, the way they perceive things, they become accountable for the decisions that they make. You can't blame mom and dad anymore. And so some of the things we want to cover, some of the suggestions maybe we want to consider as we're thinking about what makes a home a haven. Let me just say this yet. Young people, teenagers, those of you that are still in your home, that are not married or working other places or whatever, you can do so much to make that home a wonderful place to be. You can. You can also make it a place that is just miserable because of rebellion, because of selfishness, because of many other things. You can make home a miserable place to be. Not only for yourself, for your parents, for your brothers and sisters, for your grandparents, whoever. I'm just saying, you are very integral in this idea of a haven. And it's not just an idea, it can be a reality. But your responses, your part in making this a haven, it's way more, I think, than a lot of us realize. I know I didn't realize it back then, the impact and the importance of my responses in the home. But I look back and I see now, yeah, I could have done that differently. And then sometimes, you know, some things I wish I would have. When youth have had good examples as parents, their view of home life becomes based on that experience that they have at home. How mom and dad get along makes a huge impression on the child as it develops, and especially as that child gets a little older and they start thinking on their own. They form strong opinions, strong feelings on what a haven should be like or what a home shouldn't be like. That's often from the examples that us as parents show them. When youth have had good examples, it gives them a terrific advantage on when they're considering starting the homes of their own. Or even if they're called away and they're living in another home somewhere. For that young man or young lady to recognize the beauty of what a home can be and their part in it, it is huge. It makes them easy to keep. It makes them a blessing in that home. It's just, yeah. And you know, sometimes youth haven't had that advantage. But it's the future. It's what they're creating for their own life. Or it's the example that they are leaving behind. Because so often, you have little eyes that are watching. And you have these youth that are, I'm going to say, well, let me just give you an example. Like I said last evening, my first years there at Summersville, when I moved there, when my parents moved there, I was the only youth. And so for a while, then I had some friends moved in. But as I was involved in working for my boss, and his young boys would come out there, and some of the other, you know, young boys there at church or whatever, one of the moms, I think, told me, she said, "You don't realize what you're doing to these boys. They want to comb their hair the same way as you do." I was like, "Whoa, whoa. Oh, my." That put a different light on things. I was glad that mom told me that, but I hadn't quite realized the effect that I was having on these young boys. They were anywhere from 8 to 12 years old. But they were being strongly influenced by the things that I liked and didn't like. Well, like I said, there was difficult times there. I felt lonely at times. I was tempted to go and just involve myself in the youth, you know, in the local town there. And you know, I longed for... I'm a relationship person. I like to have friends. I like to be out with, you know, other people. And that pull was strong. And I'm not saying it's always wrong to do that, but be very careful when you do that. If you're involved in local youth, be very careful. There should probably be older ones involved. But I think God kept me from that because he knew my tendencies. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to enjoy. And when I became aware of what an important part that I was being there in that little church, it really put a huge responsibility, a huge accountability on the way I looked at things and my responses. And I didn't always respond in the right way. I didn't. I was young. But it also made me feel... made me aware of the importance of influence. And you can be that in your homes. You can influence for the good, or you can be an influence that drags those little eyes in a wrong direction. You know, it's important for parents to diligently seek after truth and righteousness and peace. Those are three very integral parts. Truth is found in seeking God and in his word. There's so many truths in here, and it takes a diligent study, a diligent seek for wisdom on that. Also, the righteousness and peace. You know, whenever you have two people from different settings and they come together in marriage, and they start this life out together, there's sometimes when, yeah, you cook different ways. I was used to making eggs at home. I'll just give you a little example. I was used to making eggs at home. I cooked for mom. My little sister was 7 years younger than me. And so, wow, what do you do when you have a boy like that? You put him to work around the house. So I was used to making eggs, and when I got married, I found out that I wasn't breaking up the little thing, you know, you have the egg white, and then you have the yellow part of the egg, and then you have the white around it. And my wife taught me that if you take that fork in there and you just break that out, it kind of runs out, and then it doesn't get, I don't know what you call it. In Dutch, we call it glavery. I don't know what the English word is, but it's glavery. I mean, it's soft and yucky. So my wife taught me how to do that. So, yeah, we learn things. But, you know, I felt in my heart, I know how to make eggs. I made a lot of eggs in my life, you know. Well, okay, well, open your mind up a little and maybe you learn a few things. And so there's different ways of doing things. Yeah. So we can learn from each other. But, you know, that thing within us, sometimes we, well, okay, so we also found out when we plant garden, these are good things to do with your family sometimes, especially do it before your children come plant garden together. See how that works. It's a project. And so my mom taught me that I put my foot down in the row and I plant three little corns there, at least two, but three is better. And then you put another foot down and you put two or three corns there. And I found out that was necessary. You didn't have to put your foot down. You just plant them. Well, you know, how are we going to do this? If you want me to help you, let me plant it the way I plant it. You know, well, it's not that important, is it? Okay, whatever, you know. So we learn to do things different ways. And I found out that some of these times I wasn't responding in the right. And if I didn't, you know what? There's just this clash. And it's not nice. And it's bad enough when it's just husband and wife. But when the children become involved and those things can't be worked out, it's not a haven anymore. It makes the little boats want to out the door. Go find other water. Go find another harbor. Let's just remember this also, that a safe harbor is there to protect us from the elements. A home that is an open door to all kinds of influences from the world is not a safe harbor, a safe haven for either parents or children. It is not a safe place to raise a family. When I'm saying all kinds of influences, that's what I mean. I mean, it's an open door to anything, any new doctrines, any new ideas. You know, there again, I hope none of us, in our family, we were not raised with radio and television, but there are a lot of influences that can come in those things. And I'm not saying everybody that has radio or television is a sinner. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying when we allow those influences to come in our lives and we don't protect our children, what is it, you know, what does that do to them? Not just our children, but us, me and my wife. How do we respond to those things? Okay, so maybe we don't have, maybe I don't have radio and television in my life, but what about the internet? What am I going to allow to coming into my life, into my home? I like to think of it a little bit as, you know, when Nehemiah went to rebuild the walls, they were all messed up. Those walls were tore down in so many places. And he felt awful when he heard that news. And so when he talked to the king and his cupbearer, he was the cupbearer and his king, and the king said, Nehemiah, what's wrong? You look down on the mouth today. Or didn't say it in that exact words, but he's, you're sorrowful. And Nehemiah said, well, I just heard from Jerusalem, my hometown, that it's in bad disrepair. It's in bad shape, and the people are not happy and whatever. So we know the story. You know, Nehemiah went and he rebuilt the walls. He involved people that were there, and they built up the gates that were burnt down, and they made this wall up again, and, you know, in a short time. And what a miracle. What a wonderful thing. What a wonderful picture of our homes. Building up the wall of our homes. Being careful what comes in there. Not allowing those things that tear down character and truth and compromise truth. And let's look at the peace part of it. We don't we try not to allow things in our home that tears our peace, that tears away the peace that we can have. For one, enjoying a relationship with Christ. And Satan knows that. And he's going to tempt us any way he can to tear that thing apart in our own lives. And if he can't get it, maybe he can't get me, but he's going to try to tear down the relationship that my wife has with God. Or he's going to try to do anything he can. He's always busy trying new things. And that's why we need the power of God. We need that harbor. We need to make a safe haven for our children. We need the Holy Spirit in our lives. We need truth. We need to diligently seek for peace. And the spirit fruit in our lives will bring that if we make that important. There's that wall that I was talking about, that big pier coming out there at Roaring Point, does several things. It keeps the waves from destroying my little boat as I'm coming up there. It makes so the water calms. But it also keeps out the muck and sand and everything that washes up against there. And the channel that needs to stay open so boats can get in and out, that needs to stay at least 5 or 6 feet. And if that pier wasn't there, all this muck and sand and the storms and the waves would bring and fill that channel right in. Some of those damaging waves that would like to fill in our channel, our hearts, are waves of distraction, waves of doubt, unbelief, waves of discontent, and I'm sorry to say it, but waves of discouragement also. There's times that we're just down. Maybe something's happened in our lives, we're sad, and we're discouraged, and we want to give up. I remember as a young man feeling those waves of discouragement. And you know, Satan was right there. He was like, well, this is what you could be doing if you just forget about all this, you know, forget about those little boys and whatever. Just go have fun. Go do this. And there'd be times of discouragement. And Satan was trying to distract me from the goal of being the person that God wanted me to be. And he does that for anyone that will listen to him. For everything good that the kingdom of darkness, for everything good, Satan has a counterfeit. And he says, this is the way you can do it. It's much more exciting. Don't worry about what you've been told. Do it this way. It's compromise. Yeah, you can be a Christian. You can do it this way. You can be a good young man. But you know what? If you can deviate a little bit, it doesn't have to be that rigid. Don't believe him. Go with truth. Go with what you know. The name of God is taken in vain. The truth of God in creation. Now, thinking about the things that come into our homes sometimes. Sometimes by influence. Sometimes by circumstances. You know, evolution is being taught in our public schools. Evolution is a lie. Sorry. I'm not sorry to say that. What I'm saying is truth. Evolution is not true. There's so many ways that they've tried to prove it in different ways, but those ways have a lot of holes in them. But it's Satan's way of taking people and distracting them and making them so they're not accountable to a God that we know is there. And he wants people to, you know, he wants to take them down the wrong road. And that's a good start when he can do it with the children. And when this is being taught that man evolved from, well, I don't know what they say, you know, a little whatever. But soon they became maybe more like an ape and then you know, a little more man-like, maybe like a chimpanzee or whatever. And then all of a sudden there's an empty spot there. And you have man. Okay. So you have a missing link there. They're not quite able to explain that missing link, that chain, that link in the chain. Well, I can explain it. Just go to Genesis 1 through 7. It's easy to explain. Let's believe that, brother and sister, and let's teach our children what truth is about that. Parents are being influenced today to not influence their children in any certain way, but to let that child decide as it grows up. You can let that child decide so many different things, their preferences, what they consider is right and wrong. That is a very deceptive way, a very unhappy way of teaching a child. That child will be much happier if it realizes its borders, if it's given certain areas that it does not cross. And when you cross that area, there's a little pain involved. You know, it teaches them a lot. Restraint. You know, I think of Eli of the Old Testament there. His sons became very wicked, and they were doing some awful things. You know, as people came up to the temple to offer their sacrifices, they were doing some very, very wrong things, morally wrong things. And I have to think, well, what did Eli do wrong? What happened that Eli... But let's take a little look at Eli. Eli, when he died, they say he fell back and he burst open. Eli was a very, very overweight person. And I'm not saying that being overweight is sin, but I'm just saying I think in this itself we need self-denial. We need to be careful. What are we teaching our children? But I think in this, Eli told his boys, now boys, don't do that. You shouldn't be doing that. But what happened? It didn't make any difference in their lives. So let's not take the route that Eli did. Let's try to do better than that. Let's be an example to our children, our boys. As those girls are growing up, they see what dad is like, what mom is like. And they apply some of those principles to our own lives. And there again, you may say, Sam, you better practice what you preach. And I agree. I need more restraint in some of those areas, and I need to do better. I'll just admit that. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. But that's one thing we can thank God for, his grace, is that he does forgive. And we do learn as we go sometimes. Sometimes there's repair work that needs to be done. When you have a boat and you hit a rock out there or you did a little damage to that, it's better to, before you go out next time, you fix that problem. You take care of it. You prepare for the next mission. You know, these safe harbors, these ugly piles of rock going out there, they're not beautiful. It's not a beautiful sight. It's just a big pile of huge rocks that they put out there. Somebody has done it. But you know what? They do a good job at what they're designed to do. Sometimes the things in our homes aren't enjoyable to do. It's not fun for a mom or a dad to lay down some principle, lay down some requirements. Son, I'm going to give you, maybe you give him some things that he is not to do or is not allowed to do. Let's say, for example, there's a hot pan on the stove. And you've told that little girl, let's make it a girl this time. The boys always get picked on. You told that little girl, now, little, you know, young lady, don't touch that hot pan, or don't put your hand with these burners that we have today. They're flat tops. You can't see if they're hot or not. You can see a little red light on if they're hot, but they may not know that. And so they go up there, and they just want to see if it's hot. And so they go, is that hot? Ow! Well, You know, they learn sometimes through experience the pain of not listening to what mom or dad says. But there's sometimes that we need to also administer pain in ways that they remember that you, as a father or mother figure, the authority in their life gives them borders to go beyond. They're much happier when they don't know where the borders are. And they go beyond a border that mom or dad thinks, and mom or dad starts maybe manhandling them or just being, you know, throwing them down or whatever. It's sad the way some children get treated. But it often comes back to the parents not spending time in teaching that child what the limits are and what the effects are of not guarding the limits or doing the limits. I have a little dog. And she's pretty smart in a lot of ways. And we have lost some dogs just simply because they did not learn that the road was off limits. The road is off limits. You don't go out on the road. Even if I go jogging up and down the road, that's not for you. You're to stay halfway out the drive and back. That's your area, not from there out. And so just the other day, again, I was going out to get the mail. And I was like, is she going to remember this or not? I think she had learned a time or two before that kind of where her limits are. But she's one of these little dogs that loves it when you throw a stick. And she wanted to bring that stick to me and have me throw it. And I was going out to get the mail. Anyhow, well, she was kind of going to follow me out there. And I looked at her and saw, Jingles, no. Well, guess what? She went back there about halfway and sat there until I came back with the mail. And so I'm just saying. She knew her limits. Now, I don't know that she can think necessarily that if she comes out here, she's going to get hit by a car. Probably if she were after a cat, she may forget that for a little bit. And it may be damaging to her. I don't know. I hope not. But sometimes, you know, even a dog can be trained where limits are. Much more our children. Where's the limits? What are the boundaries? What are the borders? What do I expect? And then you need to be consistent. It needs to be consistent. If we're not consistent and our children get to be youth and they start thinking for themselves, they know how far you can be pushed and where the buttons can be applied. Don't let these influences that are out there start crowding out and making the channel less deep. We need to protect those. And there again, that's where our borders, that's where our walls are for good. Do you have something filling up the channel in your home? I suggest removing it, or at least making so it cleaning out the channel again. That let's not let our waters become cloudy and shallow. We talked about digging deep yesterday. As that child grows, as those youth develop, they go deeper. And it's wonderful, it's beautiful when they go deeper in the Word of God. But they also may have other channels that they like to dig deeper in. Let's be careful let's know what they're digging into. Let's know if there are things in their life that's making their channel become filled up and shallow. It's beautiful when a home, when a family can put away the media that is there to distract us, and just spend time together, enjoying each other. That's just wonderful. I love to sit around and discuss things with the family. If you haven't done it, try it. You sometimes may have to be a little elastic in your mind on how you relate to them. Listen to them. Let them talk. And if there's truths that need to be straightened out, then there's time for that. The media of today is made to be very attractive. It's made for entertaining. And we talk about the iPhone and the iPod and the iPad. There are a lot of I in there. It's a lot of I. And I think And I think it's designed to be very singular. And when our youth get wrapped up and involved, and it's not just youth. We can as well as parents. We can become so wrapped in this I that we lose focus on what God is really intending our families, our relationship with our wife, our relationship with our brotherhood to be. It's so much more exciting. You see things that are even news. You can spend so much time looking up things and news and all that kind of thing. And I'm not saying that's all wrong. But is it crowding in and taking the time that you're given in the relationship that you want to maintain or build with your wife and children? Are you allowing that to take that time away? We need to be very careful. And there again, I was saying about being attractive and exciting. You know, it's not always that exciting. It's not always as exciting to have devotions together or worshiping together, but we really need to do that. That instills things in our minds, instills things in the hearts of our families that cannot be replaced with anything else. Yes, the church, it's good to be here, and I'm glad you're here tonight. But, you need time at home as well. Do we depend on, do we only have Saturdays to teach our children? Is that, and a lot of times Saturdays are crowded out because we got other things to do. And I know it seems like in today's world, we're very busy. We're busy people. We have bills to pay. We have people to help and things like that. But let's not let it crowd out the time that we need to invest in our children's lives. And also, I'll say this, in the life of your wife, in the life of your husband, don't be too busy to spend time with them. Get to know them. Friends want to get to know each other. And I say the brotherhood is a beautiful thing, but it also needs to be guarded. It also needs to be nurtured and strengthened. You're here for each other. And when you have an unplanned incident in your life that just sinks you, you need the brotherhood there. You do. I do. I know. There's times in our lives when we've had physical problems, maybe issues with some of the children as they were developing. Some issues came up. And I don't know what we'd have done if we wouldn't have had the brotherhood there to help us. We weren't that, we were maybe only married for less than 10 years. And we came up with some issues, blood issues in our boys. And we had to go to the hospital and had to be taken care of. There's bills get crazy. We need the brotherhood. It's not just the bills. It's interaction. Parents, you need to consider the fact of where are you putting your children? Are you putting them in a situation where they can be nurtured and strengthened in a body of believers that is there supporting and helping? Or do we want to be out on our little island where we're just kind of by ourselves? It's just us. And we really don't want anybody else involved. That's very dangerous, I believe. Children, well, let's just say, playing together is a very wonderful thing to do. Praying together is more important. Sometimes I just remember as little children, maybe praying or singing sometimes at the table or whatever. And sometimes, I mean, maybe I shouldn't say this, but sometimes it was a little humorous the way the children were responding. And the song would end up in hilarious laughter just because this little child was singing. But, I don't know if I can explain it or not, but it was so funny. And there's nothing wrong with that. Of course, it needs to be some serious times, But having fun together like that and teaching the children, as they grow, of course, their voice gets better and it's not as hilarious anymore. Whatever. They need to, when they see that parents love Jesus and they hear the stories about Jesus. They look to Daddy and they draw perceptions of who God is. Is God like my daddy? I want to be like that. Or do they say, I don't want to be like that? I hope not. They also, I believe, and again, I may not be 100% on this, but I feel it's pretty close. They draw perceptions of the church through who Mama is and how she relates to Daddy. They need that example. They need that those perceptions as they grow, get nurtured. And when they see that Mom and Dad love each other and they both love Jesus, it gives them a terrific foundation to build their own lives on. And it also, when the family gets together and you know, we spend time together, it just makes things flow together when everybody can love each other and get along. Now, you may say, Sam, you're really talking about something ideal. Well, it's not always like that. It's not always like that. When you have children, sometimes, and there I'm going to pick on the boys a little. You know, I grew up with two brothers, and they were both older than me. And I'm going to say this kindly. I love both of them, but there was a time when my next oldest brother liked to, how shall I say this? He wanted me to make him tough, okay? So he wanted me to, you know, he wanted to wrestle me, or maybe he would, I don't know, I won't go into a lot of details. But, you know, when he was on top of me and I was underneath and all I could do was holler, sometimes I hollered as loud as I could just because I wanted relief. And, you know, hey, that's sometimes how you work things out. I don't know. But thankfully, we got to the point where we actually didn't have to do that anymore. And, of course, when Mom and Dad were around, that was always kind of my... I had a pretty good voice. I could probably scream as loud as he could whistle. Anyhow, we kind of had whistling matches, screaming matches, whatever. I couldn't whistle like he could. And so when you hear this, you know, he could do it so good, you know, and... So I had around the corner when he wasn't around, I'd start, I'd just scream, and I could, so I was pretty good at it. And so when he'd come around, I'd scream, and he'd whistle, and he was about the same. So it was a pretty good match for him. But as I grew, I kind of lost that, thankfully. Brothers, sisters, we learn how to get along. And you know, Mom and Dad aren't always there. And so... Yeah, there's things we have to learn then when Mom and Dad come back, that there's an accountability time. And so I thank God for my older brother. He was a little bit like Dad for when Dad wasn't around sometimes. My second older brother is no longer with us. He's in heaven with Dad. But I loved him. I loved him. And... when he left, when God took him home, there was a big hole in my life. And I'm not going to touch on that tonight. But even during those times, we need each other. And I'm so glad I still have my older brother with me and my younger sister. She was 7 years younger. But I love them both. And, you know, I look back, and Mom and Dad didn't do everything perfect. But they loved each other. And when Dad made mistakes, I knew it. I knew he made a mistake. And I didn't feel good about it. But, I mean, who was I to tell Dad, you messed up? But then there were times when Dad would come then and he'd put his arm around me. And he would say, Sam, I'm sorry I'm sorry. I messed up. And he would ask my forgiveness. Maybe it was something he, maybe it was a reaction to mom, maybe it was a reaction to me or whatever. But that I will never forget. And I look at that and what an example. What an example for my life. Dads, don't ever be too proud to say, I'm sorry. It does so much for your children, for your wife, for your haven. Your family is your basic, I need to bring this to a close. Your family is your basic social unit. That's where these little ones learn to get along. They learn to maybe not get along sometimes, but they also learn then to how to make up. And it's not wrong, it's not bad to say, Johnny, you tell Joe you're sorry. Now, some people say you shouldn't do that. I don't know. My mom and dad did. And I know it was good for me. Now, maybe you say, well, that little boy said a lie. He's not sorry. Well, let's just say there's a principle there. If maybe he wasn't sorry, but there's a principle there to be taught. And I don't know how you do it. I'm not saying that's the way you should do it to your child. But the fact is, they need to learn how to be accountable and how to respond to a mistake, hurt, or to be accountability in that and responsibility. It's a terrific way. We need to teach our children how to do that. Families should work together. Like I say, there's projects that we can do, and you can fill in the blanks. There's many things that we can do. Growing things together is a terrific way. I had one son that was very interested in growing plants. He loved to watch plants grow. And for me, and also nature, there was one time I thought it was interesting. In the spring, you have these little frogs out there that are croaking. We had a lot of them. And one night I saw a little light out there by the, we had a little puddle out there, it was a little wet. And so I walked out there and here, one of the boys was on his belly and he was watching this little frog when he would make this noise. Whatever, you know. He had this little flashlight and he was shining on it and he thought that was quite interesting. How that little frog puffed himself out and then he would make this noise. That was good for me. He had an interest in nature, in how things worked. We have those times when we get blessed. Families should worship and pray together. This is a unifier as the children grow and come to know Jesus. Much more is taught than what is said. It gives families a terrific foundation. Families should play together. Playing together often puts kind of everybody on the same level. Sometimes dad does somersaults and goes flying across the thing when he was running or whatever, or maybe he missed the ball or something. And the children laugh. They think it's funny. You know, father said, that's a good place to be. You can make mistakes, and it's okay. It's okay. Parents, interact with your children. Get to know your children. Get to know your children's hearts. That's what God wants to do. Above all, love Jesus. Love your family unconditionally. I asked one young lady, I said, I'm supposed to give this message on the home. What makes a home a haven? What would you say? And I'm just going to quote her. It's where I can go and be myself and know that I will be understood and loved anyway. Can be yourself and you know that you're loved. Now that doesn't mean I can say anything I want to and doesn't affect anything. No, that's not what she's saying. We can go home and it's a place where we can just enjoy each other. You don't have to put on any airs. Now you probably don't put on any airs when you go anywhere, but some of us sometimes think we have to. We have to appear a certain way to be accepted. At home, you don't have to do that. You're loved. loved unconditionally. Parents, love your children unconditionally. It's very important. Isaiah 32, verse 2. And a man shall be as an hiding place from the wind, and a covert from the tempest, as rivers of water in a dry place, as the shadow of a great rock in a weary land. God bless you.